Roxanne and the Free Fighters pressed on, at last making fairly good progress. After the Quake, the Megapedes, and the Women Warriors, an occasional Saber Lion or Cloudburst seemed like a picnic. Rock knew they were getting closer to the convention site. He could see evidence that careless travelers had passed this way. Tracks on soft ground, a cigarette butt here and there. Indications of a campfire that hadn't been buried. It made him angry. How was America to survive if people were careless? No matter, though, there were no drones about, no signs that the Reds had even surveyed the area. Too close to the supposed home of the Glowers for them, which was rumored to be to the west, over a range of jagged mountains, Rock wondered if the legendary creatures really existed at all. He had never seen them in all his travels, but there were doubtless many things he hadn't seen. Every nook and cranny of the New America contained some strange life form, some hideous or beautiful mutation. They hit mountainous terrain again and moved at a median pace along winding trails through thick woods, pines and oaks that towered into the sky. The air was cool and moist, filled with the fragrances of a thousand flowers. It made them all feel good, after so much sun and desolation, to re-enter the living beauty of the country. They had just climbed up one rise and were heading down into a narrow valley when Rock saw something.
Hold up, everybody.
What do you see?
A glint of metal. Everybody stay here.
He edged the Palomino over to the pine and looked closer.
What is it?
It's a camera.
Stop. Do not proceed any further or you will be destroyed. State your name and purpose for being in this area.
Name's Ted Roxanne. We're the delegation from Century City.
Proceed slowly. Take the trail to your left, not your right. Do you understand? To the left. Do not stray from it by 1 foot.
Rock saluted the camera.
Come on, men. And you too, Miss Goldman. Let's go.
He pulled Snorter to the left and led the rest of the team along the almost invisible path. His heart was suddenly pounding. What was it? The nearness of Kim? After so many months, she would be here, and they would be together again. He didn't know if he could stand their ever parting again. They followed the pinecone-strewn trail for about a mile through dense and denser woods. They'd picked the right place for a big powwow, Rock thought. No way the Reds could sneak in here.
Hold it right there!
Hold it, Snorter. I'm Ted Roxanne. These are all delegates from Century City.
He leaned around, pointing to the others, who shifted a little uneasily atop their brids at all of these invisible watchers. A man stepped from behind a tree, holding a Liberator on full auto. He came forward as 5 other guards appeared from out of nowhere, guns drawn, and surrounded the party.
Now, you all keep your hands high. You got the letter?
Yeah, here.
Pass it here.
The man took it, stepped back, and held it up to the random shafts of sunlight streaming down through the canopy of trees.
Right. Yeah, it's okay. We put a special marking on them. Can't see it except if you hold it up to the light. It's okay, everybody. Looks like this here really is Ted Roxanne.
The rest of the guard crew walked over and shook hands with Rock and the other free fighters. Their eyes were wide with excitement at actually meeting the legendary Doomsday Warrior.
I sure am glad you didn't hit any of our booby traps. Didn't they tell you about this whole place being wired since the spring? You're supposed to come in over the North Ridge, where a regular trail has been opened.
Never got that message.
Well, anyway, we're proud to greet you in the name of the convention. You just keep going that way about a half a mile. You'll find the place.
Much obliged.
The delegates from Century City went off in the pointed direction. They passed through several creeks and a few low hills, and then saw it off in the distance, barely visible through the thick forest, a tremendous log cabin, bigger than any Rock had ever seen, a good 60 feet high and nearly 200 feet long. Other smaller cabins were nestled in the deep woods around it, and the place bustled with activity as people carried food, wood, and clothing in all directions. They rode over to the front of the huge cabin and tethered their brids to a post where about 10 horses and 1 mule were already tied. They had just stepped down when a man emerged onto the wide front porch of the cabin and walked over to them.
Howdy! I'm Drees, the official welcoming committee around here. And I take it you're Ted Roxanne and crew? Our video monitor's been tracking you for hours.
I'm glad to see you so well equipped here. This is our team. Miss Goldman.
Pleased to meet you, Mr. Drees.
Chen.
Hello.
Detroit.
How's it going?
McCoughlin.
Good to be near the right outhouse.
And Archer.
This is certainly a colorful group, all right. Come with me.
There were a few dozen delegates lounging around in the large anteroom, drinking coffee and talking. They each wore different outfits, from drab gray shirts and slacks to wildly outlandish-looking get-ups with capes, long swords, even a turban. The many peoples of America, all brought together for the first time since the war.
Did you have a rough trip?
At times, but we're here, and that's what's important.
As he talked, he kept looking around. For her. Suddenly, from behind his head, a pair of silky arms sprang, and soft hands covered his eyes.
Guess who?
Rock spun around and threw his arms around her, lifting Kim a foot off the ground. Then he put her down and stood back, just wanting to look at her. That long, blonde hair, those doe-sized green eyes. They came together again and held each other for long, sweet seconds. She barely stood as tall as his chin. He was lifting her to kiss her again when...
Could you put my daughter down for a second and shake hands with an ugly old politician?
Mr. Langford, it's a great honor for me to meet you, both as future president and as the father of such a miraculous creature as Kim.
You flatter me, Rock. I'm merely a crusty old talker, while you're a fighter, risking everything every day. Kim told me how you rescued her and then had to fight a veritable giant when you were both captured by the crazy alligators?
Just did what had to be done, sir.
From out of the corner of his eye, he suddenly sensed Kim looking at him sternly. Did her woman's intuition tell her about his encounter?
You've been a good boy, haven't you?
On my honor.
Rock held up his hand in the ancient Boy Scout signal of truth, his other hand with the crossed fingers behind his back. Langford personally introduced Rock and his team around the room, remembering everyone's name and city, expert politician that he was. But Kim and Rock kept stealing sidelong glances at one another, barely able to contain themselves until they could be alone. At last, they were able to slip free, and she took him to her bedroom, a small triangular-shaped room on the third floor of the cabin, with just enough room for a big old brass bed with a feather mattress.
You'll stay here with me, but first, let's...
But the others, I have to...
It's all taken care of.
They kissed and caressed on her bed for a long time, both of them in a dreamlike state of bliss. It felt as good as it had before, even better after their absence. He undressed her perfect body and then removed his own dirty field clothes. He felt her body straining, arching to meet his on the soft bed. He found her moist and giving to his manhood. They made love rhythmically, ever so slowly, and both were nearly silent until he could hold it back no longer.
Kim... Oh, Kim, I love you.
She grabbed him even tighter, kicked her legs out high and wide, and they moved together for a long time, her eyes rolling back in ecstasy. The intensity of what was to come built and built, and then her whole body began a long, shuddering vibration that exploded in climax at exactly the same moment he did. Then they at last were still, both dripping with animal perspiration. Blissfully exhausted.
It feels so good to be with you. A bit of heaven on this hellish earth.
Not just a bit, Rock. All of it. All of heaven. Here between us and in us. I love you so much.
She looked at him, her eyes filling at the overwhelming emotions. In a short while, their passions grew again. This time, he took her more fiercely, wanting to possess her. Every part of her. Their bodies melted together, inseparable, indistinguishable. Never had so much depended on so few. The very future of America, the fate of the planet itself, depended on them. What they did, how they voted. The delegates assembled in the main meeting hall that had once been a trophy room in the more glorious days of Americana. Presidents and power brokers of the 20th century had once come out here to hunt and relax and make deals. Teddy Roosevelt's name shone down from a brass plaque on the thick log wall behind the head of an elk, its immense horns jutting out over the room. John F. Kennedy's name rested below the head of a dark and ferocious-looking boar with tusks that looked as if they could slice a man in half with a single twist of the piggish head. The brass plaques read like a who's who of 20th century life. In this historic setting, rich with the collective spirit of the nation, the delegates from every part of America gathered. They talked in small groups, dressed in their finest, as they waited for the Reconstitutional Convention to officially begin. Men from the far South, in their gentlemen's duds and sporting wide white mustaches. Cowboys from the land once known as Texas, with six guns on their hips and Stetsons on their heads. The delegates represented every conceivable type of American man and woman in 2090. Black men wearing dashikis, representing the three black free-fighting hidden nations, as they called themselves. The Detroiters wearing the engineering smocks and workmen's clothes that their forefathers had passed on. Still experts in car making, they had driven across the country in small, one-man vehicles no larger than a child's wagon. Nearly 300 delegates had made it. Free fighters representing 91 of the country's 100 known free fighting enclaves. What had happened to the other nine is not known.
Let us pray for those who did not arrive. Their souls are surely in heaven. For every man and woman who came here performs a noble deed.
The delegates bowed their heads as each prayed to his God. Off to the side, Kim was taking the proceedings down on a video camera. As an expert in film and video, she had been selected to be the official recorder of the event. There were only paintings of George Washington and Thomas Jefferson signing the Declaration of Independence in 1776. But this time, it would all be preserved in living color. The future generations of America would be able to watch their new founding fathers and mothers in the flesh.
Ladies and gentlemen, delegates of the 100 free cities, I call this meeting to order. The first thing on the agenda is the very nature of this meeting. Is it agreed, then, that this body will, in fact, constitute a legal and binding electorate of the different cities so that we can form a government, elect a president, and a military council? It is so noted in the record.
Langford's eyes were soft and solemn, shining with the light of one possessed. He had devoted the last 30 years of his life to this moment. To this one moment. He was still a handsome, virile-looking man with graying hair that swept back over his ears, a rough Andrew Jackson sort of face, a mixture of the woodsman and the statesman in one man. Strong, self-assured, if there was anyone fit to be elected president of the new U.S., that man was Charles Langford.
I nominate Charles Langford for president. God damn it, he deserves it!
It was clear that there was no need for a lengthy discussion, debate, nomination process, or any of the formal trappings of the old days. At least on this day, the choice was clear. Charles Langford was the 42nd president of the U.S. and the first president of the new America. The elder statesman's eyes grew moist at the tumultuous reception. His quest was at an end. If he died the next second, he would die a happy man. He had accomplished the two goals in his life, and he suddenly, and for the first time, felt complete.
I am honored, deeply honored, at the trust and power you have placed in me. I pray that I'm worthy to succeed the past great presidents of our nation. May their immortal souls and wisdom guide my hands, as the spirit of democracy will guide my heart.
The convention chaplain came forward to swear in the new president on a Bible. Langford placed his hand on the black leather-bound book and repeated after the young chaplain, a machine gun strapped around his shoulders.
Do you promise to uphold the Constitution of these reunited states?
I do.
Off to the side, Kim zoomed in on her father's face with a video camera. She had never felt so proud in her life.
And to protect her citizens to the best of your ability.
I do.
Then I hereby declare you president of the reunited states of America.
The main doors burst open at one end and a guard came roaring in, pulling Charlie Whiskers by the throat. the trapper Red Spy was gurgling as his eyes rolled around in his head. The man dragging him, Varga, was immense, one of the largest of Langford's personal 50-man military force. And he had the 180-pound whiskers half off the floor.
Yeah, happens I fell asleep on guard duty down behind a log near the creek. Next thing I know, this here fella's talking into his donkey's stomach. So I go over and have me a look, and what do you think I found underneath?
He threw a small transmitter with a fingernail-sized microphone in the middle onto the platform.
Oh yeah, he was speaking Redsky, too.
Damn! I'll have to get out of here! Immediately! On foot is best! Less to spot from the air and spread out. I wish we could have accomplished more, but don't be discouraged. We have begun again, I promise you, to be a nation. I will make contact with you all as soon as I can. Now go! They'll be attacking at any time. God be with you!
The delegates saluted their president and then tore off in every direction out of the meeting hall. Roxanne ran over to Kim and her father.
You've got to escape. Don't even go for your things. There's no time.
But my papers...
Forget them. They can be replaced. We're running out of time. Run! Run!
He pushed them rudely toward the front steps. It wasn't a time for subtlety. Kim stopped and turned back, looking at the man she loved with poignancy.
I'll join you shortly. Run to the north, over the mountain. I'll see you there. The Reds will be using neutron bombs, probably two. Get on the other side. The mountain will protect you. When you hear the jets coming in, hide behind something. A boulder, anything. Just get over the top.
Rock! I...
Go! Now!
Tears in her eyes, Kim Langford turned and ran as fast as she could, disappearing up the side of the thickly wooded mountain behind the cabin. Rock turned back to the other free fighters, Chen, Archer, McCaughlin, and poor Ms. Goldman, standing between the fighting men, looking quite confused and upset.
We've just volunteered to save some of these relics. Detroit, get the flag. McCaughlin, grab the Bible there.
They spread out, grabbing the things that would one day be the history of the new America. Whiskers, almost forgotten in the commotion, leaped up from the floor and ran toward the door. Chen saw him at the last second, just as the spy was making daylight, and the Chinese warrior whipped out one of his smaller star knives.
Yeah.
The whole midsection of his spine and guts spread across the floor. Thus ended Colonel Kozlovsky's dreams of being made general. The last of the sacred objects gathered, the free fighters tore ass out the door and into the woods. Within seconds, they were deep inside the protective green awning.
Hold up,
Rock. We gotta get going.
I'm just setting our bridge free. Go! Yeah!
The Doomsday Warrior raced after his team and Miss Goldman already far into the woods. The maze of branches and pine cones filled the air around them. They ran as fast as their legs could carry them, thinking about nothing but the impending explosion that they knew must come. They had to get over the top of the granite mountain, almost another 600 feet up. As the woods thickened and the incline steepened, they became separated from each other. Suddenly, Rock saw what he swore was Kim's bouncing blonde hair off in the distance. He ran quickly to the left. He stumbled off a drop about 8 feet, but landed in the leaves unhurt.
Where is she? Shit.
In the slight opening of a mountainside clearing, he saw the silver streaks of the spear-shaped red bombers. He saw the parachutes open as they each dropped a silver ball that glided gracefully down, rocking back and forth in the wind. Then, both jets took off at Mach 3, pushing their acceleration sticks to the max. Rock glanced quickly around for any sort of cover. There, about 50 feet away, a large boulder with an indentation in the ground behind it. He ran in great strides, half leaping across the leaf and cone-strewn clearing. He checked out the boulder. It was a good 10 feet thick and high, with a slight luster of metal-bearing rock. He had a chance anyway. He lay down behind it and wedged himself in as far as he could, and then reached up and covered the exposed portion of his body with handfuls of dirt. Then he curved into a fetal position and waited. He Even with his eyes closed, he could see as if he were staring at the sun. The boulder above him seemed to tilt slightly over and press against him. Then the winds roared, and he could feel the heat coming. He took the deepest breath he had ever swallowed, covered his head with his arms, and waited to meet his maker.
Wake up, wake up.
You gotta wake up. Come on, man.
Wake up!